What are your qualifications?
Well, I attended Juilliard. I'm a graduate of the Harvard Business School. I travel quite extensively.
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I could do this all day.
The Matt Sodnikar Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Matt Sodnikar. I'm here with my Instagram friend, Aubrey Boom, who is a life coach, mental health therapist, and you've served me in that capacity quite well over the almost 2 years we've known each other. And with that, Aubrey, happy Sunday morning, and thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you, Matt. I'm really happy to be here.
Cool. We had met, and I wanted to say, I think this is probably the best way that social media could actually work. I found you through Instagram, and I'm excited because this is the first time we've ever spoken live. We've emailed, we chat through Instagram all the time, but this is great for me because you're my friend, and the fact that we've never met in person and not spoken live till now, I think it's really cool. And I had done a call for Warm Front Ambassadors, and you've been just amazing in that capacity. I just want to say thank you. Like the posts and the shout outs and the photos you've taken have definitely made a difference. And through you, I've met a couple more friends in the 505, and when social media works in this way, it's just great. And so to talk to you live in person, it's just great. So hello.
Absolutely. It's great. And it's interesting you touch on that about using social media for good. You know, I hear all the time people ragging on social media and what it's doing to our culture and how, you know, all of the time that we spend on it. And yeah, all of that's true, but I have met some of the most fantastic souls. I have met clients, I've met lifelong friends, and it's connected me with people I would have never otherwise met, like you. So it's all in the way you use it, but I absolutely love social media, and it's been key for my personal life and professional life.
Yeah. And I look at some of your statistics, like, and not to get super granular on Instagram, but you've got 2,800 followers, and almost everything you post has 10-25% engagement. And you post a photo, and like your most recent one, like 323 people liked it. And it's just, that's why I reached out, is that you have, you know, a small following. You know, 2,800 is not huge. It's not nothing, but it's legitimate. But everything you post, people engage with you, and it's cycling, skiing, running photos. But you also do inspirational and supportive messages. And I've reached out to you via email, just saying, hey, you know, I could use some good vibes. Help me out. And you respond with not just, hey, hang in there or good job. Like I was reading one of these this morning from last year that you sent like several paragraphs and just support, and it was awesome. And so I just wanted to say that meant a ton to me at a difficult time in my life. And just, I reached out because I knew you would care, and I knew what I would get back would be exactly what I needed. So you've been a couple times my life coach and my therapist. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for those words, Matt. That just touched my heart. Thank you.
So you're very welcome. And you know, you matter to me, and I think you matter to a lot of different people. So that's why I wanted to do this and talk with you today and dive more into it. So I'll take a moment to compose myself.
Fantastic.
But if you would talk to me about your life coach and your mental health therapist practice and how that came to be sort of the cornerstone of what you do. I'd love to hear that story.
Well, I went to school. I went to grad school to be a therapist, but even while I was in school, I knew I didn't want to have an office. And like, that just did not seem to resonate with me. But I had a knowing that I wanted to go deep with people. I always did. And I knew that there would be some way I would be able to use my schooling. So after I graduated, I, you know, started working in a clinic, and I did not enjoy that. I enjoyed my clients, but I didn't like the structure, the overall structure of therapy and all of the guidelines, and just, it was too oppressive for my personality and how I wanted to help other people. And I also wanted to marry my lifestyle with my work and make one an extension of the other. And that was a goal of mine, but I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. So I spent a lot of time on my bike, which is my, cycling is my favorite activity. And just thinking, how can I do this? Like, what really is it? And so I would dip my toe into different activities and different styles. And what really ended up resonating with me was when I would be out on the bike and I would meet up with someone and we would start talking. And I noticed that they would open up because we were out in nature. We were doing something that we loved. We were in a different frequency. There was no pressure. And I was sharing my vibration with them and they just responded. And I came across an article. My dad sent it to me, actually. And it was about dynamic running therapy, which is taking hold in the UK mostly. And it was mental health while running. And that got me thinking. And I thought, you know, that's what I do on the bike. And so I started providing life coaching because the ethical guidelines are different. And the dual relationships are frowned upon within the counseling world. So I thought, well, in life coaching, you don't have those restrictions. And I can provide my own experience and all of my schooling and just my life journey with somebody coming from my own framework. So I started providing that service and it just took off. And then there's other people that don't ride bikes that also wanted to get involved. So we started doing this on the trails, hiking and running. And it was just the most beautiful experience, because something else that I noticed, and this was something that I learned from my kids. If I need to have a really serious conversation with them, I'll do it in the car, because they're not eye to eye with me. They also can escape, but that's sidebar. And so anyway, you might want to use that if you've got kids. But it was just really helpful to me. I just started noticing, how do people open up? Like, under what circumstances do people unlayer their deepest selves? And I've always been a observer of human behavior. I've always been fascinated by it. And so I just after I interact with somebody, I think about it for hours afterwards. Not just what somebody has told me, but how they said it and what they didn't say. And sometimes that's more telling than anything else.
Sure.
So I've just used that. I use that throughout my personal life. And then I translated that into my professional life. And it really connects with people.
There's a couple of different things I'd like to explore with that. And when you talked about marrying that lifestyle and not knowing how to get there, I think intent counts for more than a plan in some cases. And I think back to when I had quit my engineering job. Geez, this must have been 20, maybe 15 years ago, because I had both of my kids at that point. And I knew two things. I said, the only time I was happy was when I was with my kids and when I was on my bike. And I wanted to do that as much as I possibly could. And it led down several different paths, and it's definitely been a butterfly trajectory, I would call it, from that moment to this moment. But it's kind of guided my destination or my journey, I would say. And yeah, I didn't know what that meant, but as soon as I became aware of that, I couldn't become unaware of it. And
yeah.
So it's once you have that thought, I use the analogy that a friend of mine was a Zen Buddhist at my very, very first job. And he just talked about awareness. And he said, you know, here's a simple example of awareness. He goes, look at all the red cars out on the road. And he said that there's not any more red cars than any other color and nothing's changed. You're just aware of it. And I've always thought about that when it comes to perhaps a problem or a direction in my life or something like that, but just being aware. And you're not always going to have the answer, but it will, it's amazing how the awareness will guide decisions.
You hit the nail on the head. Awareness is really what I teach clients, because without being able to identify what the issue is, where else do you begin?
Yeah,
and exactly. I think we go through life, we go through our personal lives, through our professional lives, the activities we do, and we're just on default, and we don't stop to analyze, like, what's the actual issue? Why do I have such unrest? Why do I have such anxiety? What is going on? And it takes a minute to unlayer that. And awareness, you know, when I began meditating, that changed my life. Besides sobriety, that's the number two thing that just absolutely transformed my world. And in the past, I never wanted to meditate. I had things to do, bro. Like, I used to sit there and like listen to my breath or whatever people do. I just had no interest in that whatsoever because I was a mover and shaker and I like to do things. But I read a book, and I'm a voracious reader, so it wasn't like this was the first book I had read. But I felt when I finished this book that the author was the male version of me.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What was that book? Wild. Do you remember?
It's called Transcending the Ego.
Okay.
And he spoke the way that I speak. He quoted my favorite Stoic philosophers. I just felt like I knew this guy. So I hit him up on social media as if we were friends, and I asked him about several different points in his book. And, you know, he was very gracious, and he lives in Australia. And so it would be nighttime here, it would be the morning there. He would always answer my questions. And he brought up many times in asking me if I meditated, because a lot of that book had to do with meditation, even though I wasn't interested in that part of it. So he would ask me, and when he would, I would just gloss over that and ask him my own question. Finally, I thought, you know, I respect this guy so much. He's really helped me. I'm going to go for it. So he gave me a few pointers, and I would try to meditate, and it just didn't work. I just didn't get it. But one night I was sitting on my floor with my laptop, and I had downloaded some meditation music. And something happened to me in that I was seeking so much. I had recently quit drinking, quit doing all drugs. I had gone through some very, very serious and dark situations that I could have never imagined happening. And I was just open to something new, to something more. I felt like there was something more in life, and that I was so, I wasn't diving deep enough. And I had this spiritual experience sitting there on my floor in my bedroom. And I felt like it was a gift from the universe, because perhaps if I had not had that kind of overwhelming spiritual experience, maybe I wouldn't have stuck with meditation, but I did. And so even when it was difficult afterwards, I stuck with it, and it's just been transformative. And it all stems from the beginning of awareness and just being aware. And whenever I'm feeling like I'm overwhelmed, or like something's going on that I just can't, you know, just, it's so dark, I bring it back to the basic building block of awareness, because I can't deal with it. I can't transmute that. I can't get to the other side without knowing what I'm dealing with.
That's amazing. I'm taking furious notes here so that I don't need to, so that I can be as present as I can and not interrupt. And I'll start this response in this way that I meditate as well. And I want to hit on all these topics, but just to sort of paint some broad strokes for us here. You mentioned the stoicism and the awareness. And this has been happening to me, not only in this podcast, but just in general conversations I have with anyone from a stranger to a longtime friend. And as you're saying all these things, I don't want to say that I had like a premonition. That's way too strong of a word, and I'm not sure that I, you know, subscribe to that. But the magic that's happening with all these conversations, we've never talked about this, but the fact that you and I are aligning like a puzzle piece at this point is just really amazing to me. And yeah, like on the awareness piece, I taught professional development a couple years ago and still love it. And we could go back to that career at any time. I miss it actually. But there was a course that I taught called Increasing Personal Effectiveness, and it was professional development, accountability. And there was a ladder, how to change habits and change your life kind of stuff. But the first step on that was awareness. And if I'm talking to people and if we're sharing a struggle or they reach out for help, I'm evaluating what I think their level of awareness is. Because if it's not there, I can only sort of point them in that direction. I can show them the lighthouse or whatever metaphor you want to use. But if there's no awareness, nothing else is going to happen. It needs to be there first and foremost. And I'm just looking at the meditation, the stoicism is like, I totally know why we're friends now.
I love it. And it's interesting you bring that up with the lighthouse. That is probably what I see as, somebody asked me the other day, what is your struggle in your professional life with your clients? And honestly, that's it. I see somebody who has taken the time, the energy, and their resources to reach out to me. And I am presenting to them what it is they're seeking. And they don't unwrap the gift.
Right.
You can lead somebody there, but if they won't take that radical responsibility to implement it into their lives, it's heartbreaking on the one hand, you know, and on the other hand, you know, we're all on our own journey. And I can't imagine how many times people extended that gift to me throughout my earlier journey, and I just didn't have the awareness. How many missed opportunities that could have saved me a world of grief.
And then another one I wanted to circle back to is on the bike or running, is that there's a natural camaraderie in suffering. And you know, I think being on a bike, it's sort of managing discomfort. And people that don't ride will ask me questions like, how do you ride 100 miles, or does the saddle pain ever go away? And it's just like, no, it's just degrees of discomfort where you kind of get used to it. But there's so much that doesn't need to be said when I meet somebody that's a road biker or a mountain biker or cyclocross or anything like that, where it's at times definitely not fun. And we've all had those moments on the bike where, you know, if there was a dumpster or a cliff, you know, I don't know which one I would throw the bike in or off at some point. But
yes,
you know, we could just say, oh yeah, I've done the Santa Fe Century or something like that and ridden up Heartbreak Hill, and that's all we would need to say. And we could just sit there for an hour in silence together and just know that we're of the same tribe. And I think it comes from just kind of pushing through a little bit of misery, a little bit of pain, hopefully not a lot of pain, but just sharing that mindset. And it's one of the fastest bonds I've found with people is riding or running.
We are on the same page, Matt. Absolutely. The Sufferfest is something I have embraced wholeheartedly. And it takes a certain mindset. It takes somebody of a certain bent to do that of their own accord. And I just love it. It shows to me there's such depth of character. People like it, you have to have grit to ride 100 miles 3 days in a row. Mm-hmm. You have to have, you know, grit to do these gravel grinders, you know, for a 3 day weekend up in Colorado. Like, it takes a certain kind of a mindset. But I've noticed that those mindsets, they translate well into grit in everyday life. And I have learned so many valuable lessons on the bike of just embracing pain, because it's all, you know, nothing is good or bad. Everything is neutral, and it's just how we ascribe meaning to it.
And, yes. Yes.
There's been a few times I've been on the bike early morning and we've got 100 miles in front of us, and for whatever reason, I am not in a good space. It doesn't matter if I'm in a good space. It doesn't matter if I'm in pain. It doesn't matter what's going on. I better settle in. You know, I better figure this out. And it's just, it's worked well for me in other areas. So, kindred spirits we are.
Well, you had shot me an email about the episode I did with Helen Gardner and the story that I shared about going shouty crackers up in Wyoming. And there's a Santa Fe or a New Mexico story that is on the road side of things. And I was doing the Santa Fe Century 1 year, and it was just not happening for me. I think I was maybe 20 miles in and suffering more than usual. And my first object of frustration was my cycling gloves. I couldn't get the tab just right. It was too loose or too tight. And I pulled them off and stuck them in my pocket. And I don't ride with gloves in the summer anymore for that reason. I was just like, ugh, I just didn't need the, I had enough distraction that those had to go. And then the other part, I think we were coming up on Heartbreak Hill and was just grinding up this. The road could have been like a 2% grade. It wasn't flat and it wasn't steep. It was just kind of that annoying grade that you just can't find the right gear. And I looked down at my ride computer and I was going 6 or 8 miles an hour and I had 70 miles to go. And in my head, I did the math and I was like, I'm not going to finish this ride for another like 10 hours, which is, it's not correct because there's downhills and there's flats and all that. But I just popped the head off that computer, stuck it in my pocket, and was just like, all I need to do, like, this is not helping me. The number is not helping me. And I just need to focus on the next pedal stroke, which gets me the next 3 feet, which gets me to the top of this hill. And I'm looking back on this with thousands of hours of meditation and therapy and perspective, which I didn't have in that moment. But I just, again, I was aware that this metric and this number was not helping me and I didn't need to know it. And so I ride fairly blind now to this day. I don't have a power meter. I'll Strava some rides occasionally, but like, I guess I'll be done with this ride when I'm either at the bar or back at the house. And other than that, I don't really care my average speed, my wattage, like just, it doesn't matter. Right. I'll be done with the journey when I'm done with the journey, and I don't need intermediate feedback.
You and I are going to ride one day together. We'll recruit Helen as well. I bet the three of us would have a blast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then I wanted to come back to the meditation part, and I had found that, through several different trials in my life. And I will say that I probably meditate as frequently as I floss, which is 5 days a week. Like, I'm not going to lie to you or lie to my dentist. It's like, I wish it was 7 days a week, but there's, you know, five mornings a week. But I just remember the first time I did it, the 10 minutes evaporated. I was using Headspace and doing the beginning or the principles of meditation and paying attention to the breath, which I had familiarity with from yoga. But after that 10 minutes of first thing in the morning, sitting there on the edge of the bed and just, wow, like I didn't fall asleep, but those 10 minutes just dissolved. And it was an amazing feeling. And it's something I've actually been trying to recapture ever since. But just that calm and that meditation first thing in the morning, I can't recommend it enough.
It's life-changing. It really is. And it's funny, when I bring it up, you can tell immediately who's open to it and who isn't. But the people who have been further along in their journey, their meditation journey, I ask so many questions to, I want to know. There's as many different types of meditation as there are humans. I never realized that, because there's different schools of meditation, but I didn't know how to do it. You know, I just didn't have the familiarity with, like, what do you do when you sit down? Like, do you have to sit down? You know, how does this all roll? And that guy, you know, he gave me a few pointers. And I looked up some things on the internet, you know, read some stuff. And I just basically made this hybrid of what worked for me. And I discarded the things that didn't resonate. And I just kind of built my own practice. And honestly, I don't know if that's what other people do. I don't know if they, you know, go to a meditation workshop, if they have some guru teach them. And, you know, that's cool. And I actually would like to reach out more and learn more about that. But I also, I so appreciate how I have built a personal one. You know, it's taught me so much about myself. It's been something that is, it's been engineered out of pure desire and need. And it's Aubrey's. And I don't know if that would work for anyone else. You know, I'm sure my... like what I've learned could be helpful for other people, but I don't know if how I meditate in my body and in my mind and soul would generalize to somebody else. So anyway, this is something that's been on my mind a lot lately, because I've been researching meditation retreats around the world. And I wanted to go on one just to see what it's like and see what other people are doing, because it's been such a personal experience that I'd like to share it with other people too, and just learn from those who are more experienced.
What are some of the retreats you've found that are interesting? I've heard about them, but I've never even done so much as a Google search. What are some that have sparked your interest?
Okay, so one that is not at all how I meditate is Vipassana. And people do these 10-day or 2-week retreats where you're not allowed to speak at all, and you're not even allowed to make eye contact. And you go to these different locations and you only eat fruit and vegetables. And for 10 days, that's what you do. And it's, reading what these people have experienced, it almost sounds like what we go through with plant medicines. And it's almost like a hallucinogen. And they lose it for a while. They go to these high highs and these low lows. And we can even liken it to a really long road race where you're jazzed and you got all these endorphins at one point, and then you go dark. Things can get dark on the bike and you can't get off. You can't just get off your bike when you're 60 miles into a dirt road. So you just have to regroup. And reading the experiences, I thought, I love that kind of stuff. You know, that's why I used to love drugs. Not everybody likes to hear that, but I like those experiences that I don't have in everyday life. And that is what meditation has brought me. I like to go into other frequencies. I used to love to drop acid or eat mushrooms, peyote, like whatever I was doing, because I like to control my mind and I like to like open those other doors. And I got to a point where drugs were no longer serving me and they were just such a detriment to me. So how could I bring that kind of experience into my life? And meditation has done that. And I think that there's so much more there. And I want to know how to access that in myriad ways. So that's kind of what has been prompting me to research that a little more.
Well, and you hit upon two other things that I'm fascinated by. And I think there's, you talked about bias towards meditation, and maybe prejudice is too strong of a word, but I've heard people push back on yoga or meditation. And I think there's generally an American bias towards those two practices, maybe because they're mystical or Eastern. And I was just thinking about this, that if you're stuck at a stoplight and you're some dude, and I'll just pick on a state for no particular reason, like just down in Dallas, right? Nothing against Texas. I love Dallas, but you're just some guy, you're stuck at a stoplight and you look out the window and you start thinking about going golfing that weekend. That's a form of meditation, you know? And I think there's maybe everything from a fear to a prejudice for yoga and meditation because it's weird or kooky or foreign. And you know, yoga is just organized, rigorous stretching, and meditation is just focusing on something that's your body or a thought. And that's really all it is. And it's curious that, you know, there's, yeah, people like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not doing any of that meditation crap. No, it's like,
yeah.
You ever been bored? You ever looked out the window? Guess what? You're meditating.
Yes. Something else that I have noticed that there's such a pushback on is a plant-based diet. And I have recently gone to a plant-based diet and I'm still in the transition. It's somewhat new. And when I bring it up, people become horrified that I would eat plants. Like, what? And that's fascinating to me. Like, so it's okay to eat processed chemicals and our animal friends. And, you know, I'm not saying anything like you can do whatever you want, but I'm eating a plant-based diet. And just the looks are just almost just out of disgust. And that's another attitude that I observe. I just watch what people say and I wonder, are they believing that because that's what they truly believe? Or is this just prevailing culture and that, you know, they're just going with it? You know, because they haven't stopped to actually analyze their beliefs. Because I would find it curious to truly think it odd that somebody would eat vegetables and fruit. But it's just one of those things. We just get along in our life. We just go on default and we really don't stop to become aware of, why do I believe this? Why am I giving this person this look? Like, what is it? And I'm fascinated by it. I know I'm going back to what we were talking about earlier, but people's belief systems, their thoughts, you know, they create their world. And I am fascinated by the world that they create. And this is why I've devoted my life to it. I get off on this, Matt.
I could tell. And your enthusiasm is contagious. And one thing that I'll be judgmental on or towards people is if they're being judgmental. And I know that's kind of a circular argument, but if you say that you're on a plant-based diet, I like being curious. I don't like being sold. I'll say that, but I like being curious. And yeah, I would like to unpack and explore that concept with you. And if somebody says, oh, I sleep from 10 PM to 4 AM, take a nap. Like, oh, tell me why that works. 'Cause I'm looking to learn and maybe not change any of my perspectives or judgments or decisions, but it's how the world in an instant gets bigger and gets smaller for me and asking that. And maybe I'll never be plant-based or whatever, but like, tell me the decision process and tell me why that works for you. And, but I'll notice when people are like, oh man, I could never do that. It's like, you don't have enough information to even make that decision with whatever it is. Right. And so I'll look at people that are just like, you're just close-minded, you know, and, or set in your ways or whatever phrase you want to do. And I just kind of look at that and I just go, man, you're not aware. And I wonder what you've missed so much throughout your life just by not even being curious.
I think awareness needs to be the name of our podcast.
You got it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I see these people, and I know that I used to, you know, be one of them on some level, and I'm sure I still am on many levels, where their world seems so small.
Yes.
You know, the perspective is just so limited, but it's only limited by their own doing, their own thoughts. And they could experience all of these other all these other things, these other activities, these other people and viewpoints, and how beautiful that is. I mean, what makes that the world so fascinating is the diversity. And it just, you know, when I look at that in somebody, I guess I do have that judgment as well, because I think that's sad, you know. And peace to them. And I hope that they are able to expand, you know, their view in some capacity, but it's not one that I want to hold.
Mm-hmm. I've found too that being curious and inquisitive makes the world for me pretty magical. And just by asking some questions, and I get this all the time, like people will go, well, how did you find out about this place? Like if it's a restaurant, or how did you meet that person? And at the end of it, it's really that I was just curious. A brewery, for example, will go in and is like, oh, how'd you start this place, or what's the name of it, or just asking some questions just to explore. And people open up and tell you things, and then again, I've learned something, and it makes the world smaller. And it was a skill I had to cultivate, but it really just has opened up so many connections, and it's just kind of fun actually for me.
I'm glad you brought that up. I feel the same way. And the more that I am inquisitive towards just humans, whether they be my clients or not, you really see why people behave in the ways that they do. And so many times when people behave in ways that are offensive to us, if we really understood where that's coming from, we would take less offense. People aren't usually trying to be a total dick. Sometimes they are. You know? But oftentimes it's coming from a place of fear. It's coming from a place of not wanting to be abandoned again. It's coming from the unhealthy coping skills that work at one point in their life and they've never reassessed. And so they've just continued that same coping skill that is now not serving them. But the more that I'm just curious and ask somebody more about themselves, people love to feel wanted. People want to speak about their experiences. People want to connect. And the times that I have done that, especially that when it's been a little bit difficult for me to, because they're either doing something or saying something that I'm not a fan of, I really leave that interaction a fuller person. I've just, you know, I've expanded my own mind. I've allowed my judgments to be laid aside, at least for a moment. And I've connected with another human. And I don't have that same resistance toward them. And it's just what you were even saying about going into an establishment, asking somebody something, like, that's cool. And those are the kinds of people that come back for more. Those are the kinds of people, you know, when, what about when you meet somebody and you're like, damn, we are not going to hang out in the future. And then somehow they end up being in your world for years, and you actually end up liking them because you just connected on a different level. Like, that's cool. Like, let's bring people into our lives that are not like us. I don't mean people that are going to bring harm to us and toxic right. relationships. Other kinds of people. I love that. I could have never imagined in my circle, who my circle is right now. I could have never imagined that years ago, because I only wanted to hang out with people who were like-minded, or I only resonated with people who did what I did. Like, that is so boring.
Yeah. I think back that I was fortunate. So I grew up in Pueblo, Colorado. So kind of right in smack dab in between us a little bit. And the friends that I had were weirdos. And I mean that like in the best possible way. They were very, very different from me. And I'm thankful that I had, and Pueblo's got a huge Hispanic culture, which has impacted my life in just a great way. And that's why I love New Mexico and am drawn to it. Hispanic culture, you know, the cuisine, everything about it. And a couple months ago, almost a year ago, I was in Costa Mesa for work when I was still in the bike industry. And another great social media example, met these guys that have a tiny cyclocross team out there, Team Tres Leches, and had gone to California a couple times and never hooked up. And like this time, I'm like, I'm going to go meet with these guys. Drove to Costa Mesa from Orange County, did a cross ride with these guys, went and hung out and drank some beer and just went on this cool trail. And, you know, they're straight up vatos, man. And they're trying to mess with me because I'm a white boy. And I'm like, oh, I grew up with this, like do your worst. Right. And I just, you know, saw them coming a mile away, but like we had that bond because, we were like instant friends, and it wasn't, and I'm not going, oh, well, I have many Hispanic friends, right? Like, just, I just don't care. Right. Like these guys rode bikes and they're fun and they drank beer and they're just awesome. Right. And it's like, and you know, they were testing me a little bit, but and it was great because our friendship and relationship accelerated because I had had a different exposure than somebody growing up in, you know, the suburbs of Denver. That's all, you know, just the same people, just the homogenous white culture. And it was just a great experience. Like, yeah, and I think where I'm going with this, it wasn't a thing to me, and I didn't have to think about it not being a thing. I was just like, I'm riding with these four dudes, and that's to me all that matters. But it was that difference of experience and kind of embracing that from a very young age that was just led to just another couple of friendships and a really cool experience that I still talk about that all the time.
Yeah. The more diversity, and growing up here in New Mexico has been a trip, to say the least. I couldn't look more white than I do, but here I'm the minority.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been fantastic. And the culture in New Mexico is something else. And we should chat over tacos and chicharrones some night. Mm-hmm. But I love the cuisine as well. And that's also been something I didn't understand what prejudice was as a child. I didn't get that until my sister and I went to a school, and we were basically, we were the only white kids in the school. And I experienced, oh, you don't even want to get me started on this really, but such deep bullying to where I was spit on daily, pushed back to the back of the line, bloody noses. It was something else. And it was all because of the fact that I was white. And as a 7-year-old, I was so hurt. I was a very gentle and sensitive child. And I just didn't understand, why would these kids not like me when they didn't know me? Mm-hmm. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And it was very, very hurtful for me, but I made a decision that I wasn't ever going to do that to somebody. And I think, you know, I don't know if all kids go through that when they're bullied, like they either go to one extreme or the other, like, I'm never going to do this, or I'm going to hate these people forever. And maybe that's where a lot of that prejudice comes from, is, you know, the experiences that we have as a kid. But I just remember thinking in that moment, this one particular time with my little uniform on, that I'm never going to do that to somebody because of the way that they look. And that was kind of the genesis of looking out for the underdog and going towards those people that other people were throwing away. I've just always had such a soft spot for the underdog and for the outlier. And I don't know, it's as hurtful as that was because of my race, that has been foundational to my life. And New Mexico gave me that. And it's mm-hmm. funny because, you know, most of my friends are Hispanic. This is where I live. This is where I grew up. And if I would have gone the other way and the pendulum would have swung, I can't imagine what my, just my internal vibration would be like living here. But that taught me a lot. I don't know if I explained that really well or.
No, it did. You did.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you then became prejudiced against Hispanics, yeah, and you had, it's a very valid point, you would be in such dissonance with where you live that yeah. it would not be a fun experience.
No, and it just taught me with other, you know, not just with the color of somebody's skin, but with people's belief systems, you know, multicultural sensitivity. When I love to travel abroad, and there are countries that I have visited that I would not want to live there. I really can't even imagine perhaps revisiting that place. But while I was there, I actually pulled back on that experience from second grade. And I think it's just that I don't understand. That doesn't mean I have to like where I am, but I just, let's open myself up to understanding, like, why are these their customs? Like, what's going on? And that has changed everything for me. I love going to other places, even if I don't resonate with them. I've just learned so much. And I really feel like it's due to that experience in second grade. And this is a little bit sidebar, but I used to collect beads. And the reason that I collected beads was not really because I loved beads so much, but in other cultures, especially ancient ones, the keeper of the beads is said to hold the animus of the people. So, you know, you have your like third eye, you have your evil eye, you have all of these different symbols that are put onto beads and have been passed down for the generations. Well, I learned so much about the beads. And when I would go to these countries, I would usually ask a cab driver or the rickshaw driver, like, where the beads were. Well, it's amazing. Like, most tourists aren't going to ask somebody where the beads are. The person who holds that, the beads are usually the shamans or mm-hmm. that kind of a character in that tribe or in that village or wherever we are. So I've gone and I've learned so much about the people that way. And oftentimes they'll end up taking you to different places in the community. They tell you things that you would have never otherwise learned. They'll invite you over for dinner. And it just turns into an experience I could have never imagined if I would have been at some resort down the road. And I think that it's that fascination with, why do people act this way? Why did those people hate me in second grade because of the color of my skin and the color of my hair? why? What was going on? And it's just anything that, like what we were talking about earlier, nothing is good or bad. It's just our interpretation of that. I could have allowed those experiences to turn me one way, or I could say, that's really hurtful. Like, how can that help me now? Like, I wasn't advanced enough to think that as a 7-year-old, but that impression was still imprinted upon me. And it's just been a lesson for today of like, even though these things happen that are so, you know, they're not at all what I would choose, how can I use that for my expansion and my greater good? And that's something that I talk about with my clients oftentimes with what's going on in their own lives.
Yeah. And not deciding that something's good or bad. It's just a thing. And I know that's coming from stoicism, but it's such a powerful mindset. And like, I have a lot of contingency plans in my day, in my life. And I don't do those because I'm pessimistic. I do them so that I can keep going towards a positive outcome and then not being affected negatively. So like, hey, traffic's going to back up, I'll leave early is a very, very innocent, simple example. But not the opposite of that is like getting stuck in traffic and then beating myself up and going, oh, you know, I'm such an idiot. Why am I so late? You know, my boss is going to be mad. Just knowing that things are going to go wrong, but not going down the road of being negative and pessimistic and unkind to myself. It's like, hey, things are going to go wrong. I'm smart and I can handle it. And then it's kind of putting the control and the decision-making back into myself. And it's a much happier way to live. I think like, I expect things to go wrong, but it doesn't mean that the world's a bad place.
The world is any place that we make it. And I love what you said too, about how we speak to ourselves. Like, I'm an idiot. Why did I leave so late? You know, that is something that has been key to my internal state. And honestly, whenever anybody hires me, that's what they're hiring me for. Whenever somebody wants, you know, has a goal or they have this issue or whatever's going on, what the foundation of what they're seeking is a feeling. It's that peace within. It's being okay. It's self-trust. It's self-respect. It's waking up in the morning and feeling confident and self-assured and peaceful. And how we speak to ourselves, my God, think about we believe more of what we tell ourselves than what anybody else tells us. When you're telling yourself, you're an idiot, oh my God, like, fuck, you did this again. You know, this whole thing that we just, these gyrations in our head, we just go down that path. If somebody was truly yelling that me every day and every night, what would I think about that person? What would my mindset be? What would I think of myself? Where would my confidence be? And we get rid of those people in our lives, but we keep our own mindset that we believe over and over again. And that is so deeply ingrained in people, oftentimes from very unkind voices in their past. And that's going back to awareness again. Where did that voice come from? Is that voice serving you? Do you believe that voice? And that is foundational to, if we're going to change our lives, if we're going to bring in more peace and joy and serenity, like those kinds of things, it's not what we add into our lives, it's what we remove.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got a very good friend who I'm helping with a similar issue, and I might be out kicking my coverage, Aubrey. I might need to send her over to you, because I think just my armchair psychologist opinion is that that's what she's dealing with, and have just offered, here's my path. Here's some things that have helped me. But I think at the root of it, it's her, you know, listening to that messaging from parents and maybe some other people in her life. But, you know, she's aware now. And so I've been just happy that she's even listen to what I had to say, which has been a blessing for me, and it's been exciting. But yeah, it's just like, here's what's helped, and let's talk about it. And my fundamental message to her is like, don't change how you're thinking, and I'm not telling you to change who you are. It's just kind of what you perceive and what actions you take with that, those thoughts.
Thoughts are things.
Yeah.
They have power. What we think, what we speak, and what we feel is what we will manifest in our lives. And most people are saying stuff, they're thinking things, and they're feeling what they don't want to have happen. And they wonder why it keeps happening. Mm-hmm. They wonder why feedback loop, because if we're not intentionally manifesting, we are unintentionally manifesting what we are attracting into our worlds. And that's where awareness comes to. Once I became aware that these things continue to happen to you, Aubrey, because that is the frequency, that's the energy that you are putting out. And I could have never, until I really understood and researched that enough, when I would hear something like that, I would think, I'm not that kind of a person. I'm like, why would these bad things happen? Like, I'm not doing this. No, it has nothing to do with the kind of person I am, or that I have done this and that's why I'm receiving it back. It's that's the frequency. That's the energy. It's that energy of, if you're fearful about something, you are going to call in experiences that make you fearful, because that's the frequency you're on. And so it's not that you're doing something bad and that's why these things are coming in. It's that you're calling in the same type of experiences. And until you become aware of that and know how to raise your vibration into what you truly are seeking and what you want to bring in, you'll continue on the same vibe you're on right now and continue to have those same experiences. Like in Eastern thought, you know, like the world will give you what you need to learn until you finally learn it.
Yep.
I no longer want to learn those things, Matt. Like, I'm all set with those experiences.
Yep. Yeah. Whack-a-mole. That's right.
I am all set. I had the same lesson for about 35 years. Like, okay, I got it. I am good.
Something that I think is another very interesting coincidence. I'm coming off dry January. It was after New Year's. I went for a ride, and we do a New Year's Day ride, and we go out and hit the breweries and all that. And I was just like, you know, I'm just done for a little while. And then I'd never heard of dry January, and was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I did it for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, all my jeans were turning into skinny jeans. And I was like, all right, dude, sacrifices have to be made here. But I did it to exercise the, I don't know if this is a term, but like the negative discipline muscle. Like if you give me a checklist and it's active and it's like, okay, like scheduling this podcast, for example, email Aubrey, set up this, here's this, here's this. So it's like active, or, you know, do push-ups or go for a ride. That's all like positive activity or actually doing something. But the discipline where I noticed that I was weak was in the vacuum or negative or absence space, because you have to just keep not having a beer this minute, next minute, you know, all this. And I actually did like 32 days, I think it was. And then the timing of this conversation is particularly good, because I had, you know, an afternoon of just casual beers, right? And I woke up this morning going, that's not feeling that sharp. And the thing is, I missed it a lot. One day, it was like the 31st of January. The sun was out. I was driving past a brewery that I haunt all the time. I was like, oh, that would be fun. But it gave me the awareness. I was just thinking about that, you know? And as I'm sorting through this, and I want to tie it back to like you talked about the courage to face your mentality without the drugs and things like that. Yeah, I'm seriously considering shutting it down again for another month, or maybe that's 2 months. And, but then having the courage to go at this with nothing but my mind and body. And that's kind of a long setup, you know, talk about like, you know, your sobriety and kind of explore that concept a little bit.
You are speaking my language. For one, what you said about, it's just the not doing it and how that, it allows you to think differently. It allows you to kind of go to other spaces. I resonate with that. My own sobriety journey has been something so dear to me. I mean, I am a partier at heart. There is nobody that can get down like I can. with the party, okay. I started early and I went in with both feet. And I'm fun when I party. Like, I have a good time. I'm a fun person anyway. I love to have a good time. And I'm on steroids when I'm drinking or, you know, partaking in substances. But what ended up happening is I have such an addictive personality. When I like something, I don't just like it. I'm going to do it and I'm going to be the best at it. And that can be really helpful if it's something healthy. And that can be frightening on many levels when it's something unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so I would just take it to the limit and so far beyond. And it began to affect my life in ways where I realized I was no longer, well, for one, it was no longer fun. It'd be fun maybe for other people for a little bit, but when that's all you do, it was to the exclusion of other activities. And I found it, I would wake up in the morning so hungover. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would start a 3-day hangover, especially if you're multiplying alcohol with God knows how many other things. And then I would act in ways, even if I didn't do something crazy, I would just act in ways that I wouldn't otherwise. Like, I would have more of an edge than I truly who I was in my core. I would say things that I wouldn't otherwise say. I would look back on the evening, the parts that I could remember, and think, what did I even, not that I even didn't recall it, but like, what was I doing? Like, what was the purpose of it? It seemed like I was just going out with my friends or doing this, but what were we actually doing? It wasn't like, oh, we were going out one night a week having fun. It was a nightly situation. And like, how was that progressing my life? Was I just going to wake up every morning and that's what I did? It seemed to be so limiting to me. And what that does to what alcohol and drugs do to your physical body, we just gloss over that. We don't even want to think about it. Mm-hmm. And then it numbs our mind and it numbs the spiritual realm. And what began as opening up spiritual doors began to close them in my face. And it just, things took a dark turn. And when I decided that I was going to quit everything, I knew that I wasn't going to have the same life anymore. That this is the reason so many people don't quit. That it's what they do. Like that's what I had done for over 20 years. That's what I did with all my friends. Those were my activities. Those were the people I hung out with. Like, how would I even have fun? Like, what would we do after work? Like, what do you do? And that was, you know, it takes balls, for one, to stop the madness, but it takes a lot more grit to rebuild a life brick by brick. And the things that had happened that led me to quit drinking, I never speak about because they're so heartbreaking that even all these years later, you know, to think that that's what needed to happen for me to wake up, you know, throughout throughout the times I was partying, you know, people OD'd and people I loved committed suicide and people died. And even that wasn't enough for me to stop. And it just, you don't realize when you're in it, it, how much it's taken hold. And when I look back on it now, I shudder of not only the things that I did, but the things that I became unaware of. And it just, I feel like it was a different life. And I got to the point where I was knocked to my knees so hard that when while I was down there, I thought, you know, I might as well dismantle the rest of my life and start over, because things are deep right now. So what I started to do, Matt, was when I rebuilt my life brick by brick, I mean, I honestly did that. I looked at every belief of mine and I thought, do I believe this? Is this something that I want in my life? This person, does this person support me? Is this person enhancing my life or are they toxic? Do I want them in my life? Like this job, what is this doing for me? Like, does this fill my soul? Is this soul killing? Like, what's going on? And I just did that with everything. And I didn't have a single friend during that time. I had to give up everybody because I knew I wouldn't be able to stay sober with them.
Right.
So I was on my own. It was me. And that was it. And I can't tell you how many days I would go by without a single human interaction. And, you know, I don't ever want to go back to those days. But when I look back, it's just such a sweet gift. What I couldn't have known during that time, that was the process. That was me not being able to see the light, but believing anyway. It was me not seeing at all how it was all going to come together, but I still wasn't going to drink or use. And I was going to keep moving forward, even if that moving forward was just self-soothing in my bed and not doing anything destructive.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I mean, it was those little things that in the moment I felt like I was dying. I felt like I couldn't imagine anything good, but that's where the strength came from. And that's where the self-confidence and the self-trust began, because that had been eroded away during all of those years. And I finally just started pulling it back and pulling it back in. And I could get emotional right now. I could have never imagined my life today and the gifts that I have cultivated and that I have brought into my life because of my choices. That is powerful. Nobody can take those things away from me. Even if those friendships, you know, if somebody dies, if things go awry, if, you know, jobs, they come and go. But like, I have built my life and my friendships and relationships and how I interact with the world, the way that works for me and the way that I'm proud of. It's not just haphazard. Like, I intentionally designed it. And most people, they never get to a point that things are so bad that they have to intentionally design their life. And I feel bad for them because they just kind of go along with like whatever's going on. And like, you know, right on, cool. But I've been able to actually stop and mold this all over and look at things and think, this is what I want in my life. How am I going to get it? This is what I don't want in my life. How am I going to remove it? And if somebody would have just given me the answers, it wouldn't have become the fabric of who I am. Mm-hmm. I had to go out and find those answers. And that has just been key for me now and things that are going on. You know, I have one of the darkest situations that's been brought into my life that I can barely, you know, even wrap my mind around right now. But I know that I can walk through it. You know, like it's not something that's going to resolve itself. It's going something that's now a part of life. And, you know, I don't know how I would be dealing with this right now if I hadn't have dealt with that in the past. And it's amazing how life connects. It's amazing how that awareness that we were talking about, like, you know, I remember what went on, and I know that I couldn't have known then. It's only in hindsight. And now this new situation that's going on, I'm in the midst of it. So I don't know the lessons quite yet, but I'm going to be open for learning, and I'm going to be open for walking through it as gracefully as I can.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And what I've found in that month is it was the decision, right? The choices and the sort of the lowest level of control, whether it's going to be a pint glass full of water or a pint glass full of beer, right? And it's those little habits and that decision making that, you know, builds up into a little bit of control and then a little bit of power over yourself. And, you know, it's a concept. So circling back to the stoicism, I have a whiteboard in my bedroom, and I had the days I was X-ing off of not drinking in January. And at the top of it, I had a variation of a stoic quote that, you know, death is imminent. Never waste a day at the top. And as you were talking about your story and your journey, I searched this quote because I wanted to get it correct. And I heard about it, I think last week, and it was, hell is meeting the person you could have been. And I'm going to put that on top of my board as well. And just think about that, you know, okay, do I have the mac and cheese egg rolls, or do I skip those? Right. You know, do I fart around on Facebook, you know, after I post an episode, or do I go read a book, or do I just go do 10 more pushups, or do I shoot somebody a text and saying, hey, you know, thinking about you, you know, appreciate you, you know? And it's just in getting through that month of, first of all, deciding it, tracking it, making it happen, and yeah, through various circumstances, executing that. It's like, oh man, I have to admit, Aubrey, I didn't know that I was that strong. I didn't know that I was going to make it, 32 days without having a beer. And it was like, wow, I kind of impressed myself.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go right ahead.
For one, it's absolutely awesome, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
And cannot believe that you brought that quote up. So the quote, hell is dying and meeting the person you could have been. that has been foundational to this life journey of mine. And I love that quote so much that I have a digital course that I created called Free From Fear. And that is what it's based upon. I can't believe that you brought that up.
No kidding.
Yeah. Because that is like, I can't imagine a worse hell. And where that quote came from for me is in the morning towards the end there, it's probably for at least a year, I would wake up each morning crying. And that was not I was not a crier at that time. And I wouldn't know, had I been crying for seconds, had I been crying for minutes, an hour, I had no idea. And I felt like my soul itself was crying out, like, are you going to go through your whole life? Are you going to live and die like this? Like, is this what, like, you have one life in this form around this planet, and that's what you did with it? Like, that is unacceptable. Like, I would just, like, fuck. Like, when I would wake up in the morning, I was so in the depths of addiction, and I just thought, is this what I'm doing? Am I going to live and die and never get it handled? And I read a book and that quote was in it, and it just like dropped the mic on that. I could not imagine that being like, I've been given all of these gifts. You know how you have those attributes within you, and they don't, maybe they're not even expressed, but you know that you have those cool qualities in your personality. It was those things that probably nobody else even knew I had within me, because I wasn't expressing them because I was just involved in other things. And that's what would make me cry in the morning. It was like coming out in my subconscious that this, you've been given this, and you're just doing such, you're having such a mediocre existence. And I look around and so many people are having this mediocre existence, and they've got all these great qualities that they're just not doing anything with. So that, and I realized that the foundation of it is fear. And that's why I created that course, because the reason that most people don't change their lives is they have these limiting beliefs that are rooted in fear.
I couldn't agree more. And I've explored that as a concept, several times. And one of my favorite books is the Science of Fear, and how we're wired, and the amygdala has, you know, kind of not been our friend anymore, because we're not running from lions and stuff like that as, you know, cave dwellers. But that's one of the things that I will go through on a checklist mentally is, am I afraid of this? Or what am I afraid of? It's interesting because I had a reminder just pop up on my calendar, which is a weekly finance review. I do it Sundays, which is like bill pay and things like that. And I still have a biophysical reaction logging into my checking account online, which I don't need to worry about it anymore. But there were times when it was getting down to, you know, three digits in my checking account and no commas. And I'm talking like $9.67 from years ago, and not even that long ago. Just this could have been 8 years ago. And, you know, being an adult with two kids, and I was on food stamps, right? This is a college educated person with two kids and being on food stamps. And I still have this fear-based reaction still because of how deep and how dark that was, going, I've got to feed my kids and I've got to scrape together a mortgage payment. And like, ooh, I guess the cable bill's not getting paid this month, which eventually went away. And, you know, but I've got a great job and savings and have recovered from that. But I still, when that pops up, like I still have a tightness in my chest, and it's that fear. And it's like, oh my God, I'm going to lose the house and the kids are not going to love me and all that sort of stuff. And it's something that I have been made to stare in the face, but one of the things that has to get crossed off the list is, what am I afraid of in this moment? And making myself kind of charge towards it.
That's a wonderful example that you gave. And the fact that I opened up and I was telling you something that's going on with me, and then that you felt safe enough to be vulnerable and to speak about that to people that are going to hear this on your podcast, that is the connection that I live for. That is the connection that I work for. And that's what I was touching on earlier. Like, just being real and vulnerable and sharing myself on the bike with my clients, with those ethical guidelines in therapy, a therapist doesn't share their own personal experiences. With life coaching, I mean, I certainly don't want to make it about me, but my experiences and what I've learned and my experiences with other clients, that's human. And that is going to help another human on their life journey. And the fact that I have been chosen to be that person to somebody is such an honor. And I just, you know, it's touching. And I'm also just grateful that you and I, just in this, our first conversation live, I just connect with you. I'm excited to meet you in real life and have you as a lifelong spirit in my world.
Me as well. And I use that word honor, I wouldn't say frequently, but when I do, it is meant genuinely. And I have a lot of deep, dark secrets from people that it's an honor for me to carry. And that means, I think it's the ultimate compliment, because I don't even go, like, if you and I were having our tacos in, you know, this summer, like, I don't even go, hey, Aubrey, I got this friend, like, check this out. You know, like, I don't even relate the stories anonymously. And I think people subconsciously know that. And so I have a lot of deep secrets from people that I have listened to and actually forgotten. And I think they also know that I'm not going to judge them. And so when you use the word honor, it's a word that I use sparingly, but deeply. And so, yeah, it's an honor to be your friend and to be, I would say that you're one of my best friends that I've never met and never spoken to until this moment. And it's great.
That's awesome.
And it's great. And I love it. And it's, you know, the more that I, and like I said at the start, it's not even this podcast, right? It's just the conversations I've had. And it's just, it's great that this will be archived and immortalized, but you know, it's just a blessing and something I'm so thankful for, that the events and the pain in my life and the high points have shaped both of us, that we are ready for this kind of connection. And it's just, you know, I'm going to be on an emotional high surfboard for the day. And this is all thanks to you. So it's just great.
I feel the exact same way. I thank you so much, Matt. I just, it's interesting how we attract into our lives what we need, and how what I was talking about, like, I intentionally want people just like you in my life, and the universe rises to meet you. You know, we take one step towards it, it takes two steps towards us.
I agree. Well, I think this is a great part one, Aubrey. I will post places where people can find you, but for the listeners that would like to hopefully connect with you, at least in some fraction of the way you and I have connected, where would be the best place for people to find you?
Really, the best place is Instagram. That's where I dwell. And that's Aubrey Boom. I used to be Hair Twirler, but I changed my name. Yeah. So it's Aubrey_Boom. And then on Facebook, Aubrey Boom, and my website, aubreyboom.com.
Awesome. I'm somewhat speechless, and I'll just say thank you. This has just been incredible. I knew it was going to be good, and it's just stunning. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.